Good morning, good people. This is Kiplin Primus, your host for The Local Take on Jazz 91.9 WCLK. This morning, we're joined in the studio by Dr. Zandrietta Timms-Cook, an infectious disease doctor who started the Heather Ivy Society. Dr. Timms-Cook, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
And we are here today to talk about March being Women and Girls HIV/AIDS Awareness Month. And as an infectious disease doctor, you work with HIV and AIDS patients. Can you tell us just a little bit about some of the patients that you work with and how they found themselves in this challenging chronic disease life?
Absolutely. So let me start by giving a few statistics about our current HIV epidemic in the United States. Currently, we have over 1 million people who are living with HIV. About a fourth of those patients are women, and an overwhelming majority of those women are African American women. The predominant location of the epidemic has also shifted. I think historically we've thought of New York and perhaps San Francisco as being the epicenters of the epidemic, but currently the South is highlighted as a hotbed, so to speak, of new HIV infections. So I have a lot of women who have found a likeness in me as a provider, as an African-American provider, who can give them a level of care and compassion that doesn't judge, doesn't harass, doesn't kind of approach their situation in a damaging format. And so we formed a camaraderie, and the Heather Ivy Society was birthed in that camaraderie.
And I have talked with people who have tested positive, and then when they go to the, you know, medical community for assistance, why are they still being judged? And I ask that because you kind of think you hold your medical community to a higher standard. We know that this is a disease that comes from humanity. It's from sexual relations. Most humans on the planet enjoy and have sexual relations. So why are we still finding the stigma so strong, not only in the general population, but in the medical community as well?
It's a question that I'm so grateful that you bring up. I think all of it starts from the historical perspective that we were given in terms of HIV. It was introduced, I think, to the world in a population that was considered at the time having deviant sexual practices, doing things outside of the norm. And I think those perceptions have persisted. And even for patients or people who are HIV negative, they perceive their risk of getting HIV infection very low if they do things that are considered more mainstream. If, say, you're married, you have one partner instead of three or four. You've never had a sexually transmitted infection, but that is not the best marker in terms of risk. And so I think the stigma follows the historical perspective that we've always had of HIV.
I am one of those people who, honestly, when Magic Johnson came out as positive, you know, when you try to look at the bright side of things, I thought, you know, this is going to be wonderful because now people are going to know it's not a gay man's disease. People are going to start using condoms. I was like, the, you know, unmarried birth rate is going to go down because people are, you know, sex will be with condoms now. But it seems that really did not happen. We're in this epidemic in the South, and we saw the epidemic, you know, 10, 20 years ago in the urban areas. How did we miss it? Atlanta is ranked number 5 in the nation for people living with HIV, which just means if you're having sex in Atlanta, your risk for contracting this disease is exponentially higher than if you were having sex in New York at this point.
And having sex with only one partner in Atlanta versus having sex with, say, you know, multiple partners someplace else. It's all the sexual networks that exist that you choose a partner from. But going back to your question, you know, our landscape has shifted, and we've had a number of different technological changes, and just everything about life is different now as opposed to in 1981 when we first learned about HIV. A lot of the young people never lived through that period. They hear about it and read about it in books just as, you know, they read about the marches in the 1960s. So it all seems like something that was in a different century or a different time. And that, again, the perceived risk of getting or acquiring HIV has decayed. And people really don't appreciate the level of risk that exists simply because of where you live or from what circles you happen to choose a sexual partner from.
So, women and girls, we have some control over our bodies and some control over saying yes or no to sexual relations. What can women and girls do today to decrease their risk of exposure to HIV/AIDS and to contracting HIV?
I think one of the fundamental approaches to having a physical relationship in this day and age is to approach it the way we do in a hospital. In a hospital setting, we assume that every patient that we come in contact with is perhaps HIV positive or has some transmittable disease. And I think in approaching relationships, it should happen in the same way. Think of it that way until you have evidence of the contrary, and be prepared to know how you're going to navigate that relationship with all of the tools that exist to prevent, to abstain, but utilizing those tools to keep yourself safe and to remain HIV negative. But women have a lot more control over the over their bodies and over this situation than perhaps, you know, a lot of women may really appreciate. I think the second thing, again, it goes back to risk. I have a lot of women who are perhaps married. They've been married for decades. They, you know, are loyal to their families, and they believe that their spouses are likewise. And I think that is exactly what you should do in the context of a marriage. And so whenever I've asked a woman who, say, fits that profile, may I screen you today for HIV infection? There's invariably pushback. And the question is, why do I need that test? I'm married. And, you know, you can, you know, move away from that extreme to say someone who may not be married, but they've been in a relationship with the same person for maybe a year, 2 years, 3 years, and they feel exactly the same. I'm comfortably in the context of a relationship. How does that put me at risk? But I think risk should be thought of more in terms of what your partner may do and less in terms of what you know yourself to do. So you may not go out, you may be loyal, you may have only one partner, but I don't think that's the safest way to approach HIV prevention.
And there's no harm to come from learning your status. One of the things that I remember even from those bad old 80s was that HIV can live dormant without any symptoms.
Any clinical evidence. Absolutely.
Depending on what your lifestyle was about maybe 10 years before you got into that monogamous relationship.
Absolutely.
So it's not a judgment call to have a HIV test to learn your status.
Absolutely. I think it's a responsibility. I think every person who is sexually active or even contemplating that should, as a first step, be screened for HIV infection. That's the responsible thing to yourself as well as your partners. And again, you know, we talked about sexual networks and, you know, your community's HIV viral load is how we speak of it sometimes. And when everybody chooses to approach it that way, the community's viral load decreases. And then regardless of what you may, you know, prefer or choose to do as a sexual practice, everybody's a little bit safer in the process because everybody is being responsible.
And everyone knows their status.
And everyone knows their status. And with knowing your status, you know then how to get linked to care, get on medication. And there's a new acronym, you know, we have them often, U equals U. So for those who are positive and linked to treatment, on treatment, when they are on medicine consistently and they're undetectable, undetectable is equivalent to untransmissible. So your ability to transmit HIV to someone else is obliterated.
And I know we've got new technology. You've got PrEP, you've got PEP, you've got people with undetectable viral loads so that they cannot.
Treatment as prevention.
Yes. But it is still a chronic disease. And the best route for a chronic disease is not to get it.
Absolutely.
And is that what's making, I mean, are people thinking, oh, it's okay if I get it, I'll still live? I'm still trying to understand how this disease is in epidemic form in the city of Atlanta in 2018, mm-hmm. when we have known what to do to stop the transmission of HIV since the bad old 80s, as you say.
Yes. I think demographics differ in terms of kind of what they perceive as, you know, a lesser risk or lesser urgency behind HIV. Younger people, because they didn't live through certain periods, and they, from their perspective, have seen it as a manageable, symptom-free, minimal deaths. We don't see that anymore. So for them, I think there really is not such a sense of urgency. It's, you know, I hope I don't have to ever require treatment. But if I do, I take a tablet, I take a pill a day, and then we're getting new things that are like depo shots, you know, a shot every quarter. Then you have older people who live through all that, but they think that they are not a part of the at-risk community. And so things do still happen because you believe it to be a condition that only certain people should have to worry about. But in a city like Atlanta, where everybody looks good, everybody's articulate, everybody's smart and educated, you can be easily fooled into thinking that, you know, a person like that certainly would not have, you know, any infection to transmit. And I think that's where people are surprised.
Now, you helped to found the Heather Ivey Society. Could you share with our listeners what that is and how it is working to support women who are positive, but also who just care about this disease and how it can be stopped or, you know, put into a new perspective, so to speak?
Sure. The support group Heather Ivey Society was formed in 2012, and it was birthed because a lot of women who didn't fit the stereotype, they were women who had corporate jobs or they were married, they were engaged and were tested right before the wedding and were devastated with a diagnosis. So they would come and they wanted support from other women, but feared the stigma if they were to reveal their diagnosis to family or friends. And so they begged for a way to have that support. Now, in the beginning of it, we'd have events and nobody would show up because they knew that by showing up, that would out their status. So we found a creative way to have blended support groups and also online support groups for the women. But the goal of it was to provide the support and to be an information resource and even a platform for advocacy in anything or any matters related to HIV.
Now, I mentioned PrEP and PEP. As an infectious disease doctor, do you see other tools on the horizon for use with treatment of HIV and AIDS? And is there any way we can update Snapchat? Or, I mean, I know this technology that we're using to meet and greet people, but how can we make these tools more responsible and more responsive to the actual situation that we're living in.
Yes, there certainly are a lot of different approaches to PrEP on the horizon, and they're being studied, especially different avenues in women. The current FDA-approved method is a pill that's taken once a day, but there are vaginal inserts, there are injections that are currently being studied and hopefully would be more convenient and more amenable to women or other groups. There are, and I've, you know, actually appreciated seeing this, there are a number of dating sites or meeting apps where they do advertise PrEP, and they make sure that, you know, at least as you're surfing these sites, you're aware that these options exist. For women, I think, you know, it's platforms like this to allow more people to know all the strategies that exist. You know, abstinence is one thing. And, you know, for certain groups like our girls, we hope that that's an avenue they choose until, you know, something meaningful is, you know, offered to them in terms of a relationship. But for other women who, you know, are more mature and have a more mature relationship, that these options are there. They're convenient, they're safe, they're tested. And, you know, I always say, why pay full price for somebody else's indiscretions?
I love that. And I firmly believe, Dr. Timms Cook, that if we educate women, women can come together and put an end to this epidemic.
An end to the crisis, absolutely.
Now, how can our women listeners get in touch with you and maybe interact or engage with the Heather Ivey Society?
Absolutely. So we have ongoing meet and greets. We actually have one that's coming up this week. But please feel free to call. Our number is 770-826-7077. Or if a clinic visit is of a more urgent requirement, my current office location is 285 Boulevard, Suite 525 in Atlanta. It's on the WellStar Atlanta Medical Center's campus.
Dr. Timms Cook, thank you so much for coming and sharing this much needed information. And I want all of our listeners, women and girls, to be aware that this is HIV/AIDS Awareness Month, and there are things that they can do to protect themselves.
Thank you very much.
All right.